You're listening to a nerdy production.
Warning, this is a nerdy production.
Welcome to season 3 of the weekly podcast about game mastering and role-playing, the GM Workshop. This season, I wanted to reach out to more game designers and more GMs than I need your help, so sign up on Patreon. The link is in the podcast notes. Remember to pick up our free scenario, Jungle Chief, so check that out also in the podcast note.
Roll for initiative.
Welcome inside the GM Workshop. Today I'm with Eric and Katie, and they are about to launch a website called Adventure Unbound, which are a D&D online gaming platform, so we can dive into that later. But Katie, you are on our episode 8 in season 2, where we talked about Ravenloft and D&D. So if people want to talk some more about it, hear more about your exploration in the role-playing community, they can find that episode, so I will link it into the podcast notes. But Eric, you are new at Inside the Workshop, so can you tell us why, what you're going on in your role playing career right now, and where did you start it? Where did it start?
Sure. Yeah. So thanks for having me on, by the way, Jacob. Really appreciate it. And I think, I mean, the reason I'm here is because I got very, very heavily into online D&D. During COVID, it was a way to connect with friends when we couldn't be face-to-face. And it sort of drew me out into the online world, which I'd never really explored much of. And over time, I found I kept having ideas of, wouldn't it be cool if? And wouldn't it be nice if? And all of those wouldn't it be cools and wouldn't it be nices have sort of turned into this project that is ready to launch called Adventure Unbounded. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah. Where did you start your role-playing career as such, like GMing especially?
Yeah, especially GMing. Okay, so when I was a kid, like young, I had touched upon D&D, and that had to have been early. I think it was AD&D. And I had a friend that wanted to play with me. We didn't have a large group, so we sort of played two, three of us. I remember running games at summer camp in the dirt with a stick. And I would just make it up. I didn't know the rules. I just knew the idea was you get to run a story and everybody else gets to say how the story goes. And I get to draw, like, here's where you are. And it was pretty rudimentary. We're talking stones and dirt. and then I never really got to play it in high school days. But in college, I had this incredible experience with role-playing games where there was it was called the Excalibur Club. And they would host a campus-wide role-playing event every semester. And I had always been interested, so I went. And they were amazing. It was a set of GMs that ran all sorts of different systems. And you didn't have to know what you were doing. They just kind of got you in and got you playing. And it was extremely engaging and vivid. And that really launched my love of role-playing games. And then, you know, like anybody, I played. Time goes on. You get older. But I didn't actually start DMing until COVID. And then I took it on, you know, as obsessively as I take on all the other pursuits. You just kind of get really into it.
Yeah. And you took the GM mantle when people need you in the COVID era.
Yeah.
But Katie, what have you been doing? Have you run Curse of Strahd a bunch more times, or did you find something new love?
Yes and no. I finished Curse of Strahd as a DM, but I've also taken up some kind of tutorial, kind of workshop kinds of things to help people learn how to run games online and how to use these online tools. And I'm working with Adventure Unbounded. I'm really excited about this project.
Yeah, it's gonna be a great talk. We'll take it on that later. But as you said, the both of you are playing have played a lot of online gaming, and in Denmark we have been so fortunate that the COVID it's been here, but the online gaming is much more broader in other parts of the world. And of course, I played some online gaming, but I never catch on to it. I feel I can't connect with my players as I can in the real the real gaming world, but. You guys have played a lot online, so can you help us be better at this, because I want to play more role playing games and it's far easier back in my with my computer, but also maybe some of my listeners actually want to start up a online group because they want to play with guys from US or whatever, UK and Germany and New Zealand and whatever. So there is a lot of especially niche games, but Dungeons and Dragons is not as niche games as you have played a lot, but some niche games are hard to find players in your local community and so on. So what is the draw for you in online gaming? It's not a necessity anymore in the post COVID era. So Eric, how do you find your love for it, and how did you cope with the fact that you cannot see your players or touch your players or whatever?
It's a great question, because I love it, and I'll tell you, they both have my heart. I'm with you, being live and seeing the faces and rolling the dice on the table and drawing the map with a, you know, dry erase marker is really vivid in a wonderful way. It's the way it's always been, and it's a wonderful way to be social and to play such an extraordinary game or type of game, you know, role-playing games in general. Now, I have found it can be just as engaging to play online with people. You know, sometimes you play with people who are on video with you, so you can see their faces. In fact, I've seen people full-on act, you know, get out of their chair and, you know, pantomime exactly what they're doing on video. And other times you play just like now, like, you know, just through voice, and you use a central screen that's shared. There's all these different tabletops that are available with different, you know, features and different bells and whistles. But it really does, I find it very engaging. And I'll say that online, some of the more advanced tools have added to the game for me. And for example, if you've seen dynamic lighting for maps, it's a little video gamey at first when you're like, oh, that's kind of not like traditional D&D. You know, you usually get to see the whole map and you just kind of pretend you don't know what's around the corner. But when you're actually moving your token through a map and you can't see around the corner, it's a little more vivid in its own way. And so that really has allowed D&D, or I think different role-playing games I've seen, to be just even a little more immersive in its own way.
Yeah, so when I tried to play it like in the COVID times, and I love to put up in my NPCs, it was easier for me to show my players to my NPCs, and you said the map revealing them,
yeah,
in when they're moving forward and so on. It's like we would only use roll 20, so I'm not that experienced with BTT, so you have to draw on your experience to tell more about those. But yeah, as you said, the experience that they want to explore an area much easier on a computer for the players, yeah, for sure. Katie, have you... yeah, sure. I'm sorry.
Well, let me just say, I'll say one other thing too, and that is just from the DM perspective or the GM perspective, depending on your flavor.
Yeah.
One other real nice advantage to these virtual tabletops is how much automation they can get out of the way that is not an important part of running a game. It's just necessity, right? When you're live and you're moving tokens around and rolling dice and tracking things and all that stuff that you do on paper, it moves along, but you know the speed of combat in an average game where there's combat, or you know the kind of speed of exposition, and you know how complicated it is to show up to a venue with a folder full of handouts. And online, it's just so, they really have removed some of those barriers. It's very simple to give a handout, and it can be very colorful and interesting because it's digital. And the fact that you can automate the roles, you can automate, if you wish, you can automate a lot of the kind of mechanics that have to happen for the game to happen, can be kind of run by the computer. So there's more time to be the humans playing the human part of the game.
Yeah, for sure. But Katie, you have played a lot of online gaming as well, and it's mostly D&D, right? Or only D&D. What is your experience with connecting with your players versus connecting with your... we talked about the convent games you ran in the beginning of your glorious role-playing career. So that's a different, it's a different take on how to connect with your players. How do you help other GMs understand how to connect with players, and how do you do it this to make sure that your players are engaged?
So one of the things that I like to use a lot is Discord as a tool to connect with people outside of the game session. So even if you were playing in person, you could do that. But when you're playing online, it's kind of the default where you have a Discord server set up so that you can do voice calls or video calls to play the sessions, but you can also text each other in between games. A lot of my games and on the Adventure Unbounded server, we have a place to just chat, send random messages, send memes or jokes, and connect with each other just as people outside of the game so that, you know, we're keeping that communication and keeping those relationships going.
Yeah, and connecting with your players, like text, as you said, before games and during games as well, also. And of course, the Adventure Unbound platform gives some new opportunities for GMs, and we can... I'm looking forward to dive into those aspects in a moment. But how the key difference for you when playing real life and on the screen, what are you missing, and what are you, it's okay for you, and it's not a sales point for you as well. How do you find this?
Well, I like to use music a lot in my games and play thematic music, switch to battle music and things like that. When I play in person, I am pretty much 90% of the time running at a public game store. So it's not very feasible to play dramatic music when there are three other tables going on in the same space. It's not essential, but it is something that I really like to have. When you're playing online, you can have those things. And kind of like Eric was saying, when you play online, the automation is... it makes things go a little faster for the things that have to take place but aren't necessarily the funnest aspects of RPGs. You can have the computer do some of those things for you.
Yeah, especially. And I like the, as I said, the ability to give the players handouts. Mm. I like to use video handouts and voice handouts. It's much easier to connect with your players that way. And, of course, showing your players that I've... This is the barkeeper. This is the bad guy. Whatever, show the pictures easily, and then the area of AI drawing So it's so easy to figure out how to also locations. You see this castle. It looked like this, and so on. It's very, very easy. And if you want to show that on the real table, it's pretty difficult because the players are disconnected from the role-playing experience at the table because they have to see on a computer screen or at a whiteboard, electronic whiteboard, or you have printed these characters out and so on. It's just a shit show in real life. So it's much easier on a VTT, right?
And it's expensive. Try printing out color pictures to show your players. Jacob, I hear your question. I want to add one more idea, in terms of one way that online gaming is interesting in how it facilitates the play. I've run situations both live and online where, heaven forbid, the party splits and someone has ventured off on their own.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting to think about how it plays out live versus online. So live... yeah. I had someone fall down a trap door, room, and they were falling 50 feet. And obviously, whatever they're about to tell me they're going to do in reaction to that, no one really would know what's happening. So yeah. I took him in another room, and we quickly talked about what's he going to do. And then we go back in the room, and we tell everybody else what's going on. And I pull him aside again. And it's a lot of running back and forth between rooms if you really want to do that.
Yeah.
If you're using Discord, all you need is a second voice channel. Yeah. And you just tell someone, okay, you... I actually had a player do this thing where he plane shifted without thinking about it, and now he's in the ethereal plane, and no one can see him, and we're online. So I just made his token invisible to all the other players. He could still see everybody. And then I put him in another voice channel so that I would check back and forth. I would just click in and be like, hey, what are you up to now? Okay, cool, got it. And then I'd click back. And it was actually a lot easier to run the split party online than it is live.
Yeah. And I don't know what kind of VTT you're using normally. You said Discord for voice, but what visually thing? I use Roll20 because it was free, and I didn't want to invest anything in it because I'm not a big D&D player or anything. So, but but the VGTs are evolving, of course, and the companies behind them are using tons and tons of money on creating some beautiful programs for you guys. What kind of VGT are you using, Katie?
Well, I like Foundry, but I have helped people learn how to use Foundry, how to use Roll20, and I kind of like to say the best VGT is the one that allows you and your players to achieve what you want to achieve.
Yeah. What are your best? Why Foundry for you, Katie? What is the draw for you there?
Well, I like Foundry because it has the customization that I like to use. Yeah. So I feel it has a few more features that allow me to customize my game and, like I said, kind of create that experience that I want for my friends and players. Yeah. And it's been, it's got a bit of a steeper learning curve than, like you said, Roll20. But with that, you can learn to do more customization and kind of things like that, more automation, more animations and stuff.
Yeah, it's seems pretty cool, and I've seen a lot of YouTube videos and so on. So the people have created some great stuff on it, and as you said, the learning curve is very steep in compared to Roll20, and Roll20 is very simplified. It's easy to run games in that aspect, but it's very ugly. but it's there. So how about you, Eric? What's your cup of poison?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's been interesting because as we've auditioned DMs over the past year for Unbounded, I've seen so many different online tabletops. And I have to say, they have their strengths. There's a reason one DM would audition with Owlbear, and another one would audition with Foundry, another one with Shard. I've seen most of them, or a lot of them. I can't say most. There's so many out there now. Yeah. I loved Astral Tabletop. Yeah. Rest in peace, Astral. I'm going to miss you forever. So I was an Astral guy, and absolutely loved it. It had this beautiful... You could really customize everything very easily. I could set all the actions, all the attacks, and all the saves, and all the text that showed up when you clicked whatever with a monster. You could just do anything very simply. And their dynamic lighting was gorgeous. It was just a really nice version of it. They also had this trigger mechanism where you could click a button as a DM and have all these different things happen right away, and you could set it all up, and it was very fun. But I guess it doesn't matter because Astral is gone. So when I made the transition, in Unbounded, we had a lot of talks about VGTs, and we settled on Roll20 and Foundry are sort of the two that seem like the ones that most people are going to be comfortable with. And you need to have one that's a little less intense for machines and internet, so that's Roll20. And then for people that can handle the internet version of it and their machine can handle it, Foundry is amazing. And I've moved to Foundry, and I also love Foundry. It has features that I've always wished I could do, and no other tabletop had shown me that they could do it. An example, you can have a token. You can set up a map where there's like a secret spot, like say the top of a stairwell, where a token hits the top of the stairwell and then is immediately moved to the bottom of the stairwell somewhere else on that map or even another map. And having it all connected so people can explore, and as a DM, you can just follow them around, is really, it's a time saver, and it's also a cool experience for the players.
Yeah, it is. My, if to be devil's advocate here, but I play a lot of not very combat focused game or exploration focused games, more investigation and emotional games, and I cannot really connect with my players. I tried to play some online gaming. I played some Ravenloft D&D, where we have a lot of investigation part of it, and I miss some of my connection with my players. So for me, when I see VTT and I see online gaming and YouTube channels and so on, I see this where most GMs are more, it's best for combat and exploration games. Like, as you said, the dungeon reveals themselves and there's a monster and we'll move on and we have some role playing, like talk about what kind of loot the monster had and or what kind of traps or what kind of clues this bad guy leaves behind or whatever. But then we moved on and at exploration and combat, and role playing games are, the role playing parts are more difficult to use the VTT or online gaming, and it might be better to meet in real life to role-playing games. What are your experience in this, like the role-playing, combat, exploration, like the big three pillars of classic Dungeons & Dragons part of it?
I'll jump in on this. I'll be devil's advocate to your devil's advocate.
Yeah, sure.
I played a one-shot with someone I found online through one of the services, which I will not mention. It's not my service. No. But I played a one-shot with a guy running a D&D one-shot. I forget whether it was Foundry or Roll20 or whatever, but it didn't matter because the entire thing was theater of the mind. Combat, role play, exploration, all of it was theater of the mind. All we looked at the entire time was an image. He put up an image, and that was sort of the vibe and the setting. And then at some point, he changed the image to a second image when we were in another place. But other than that, we didn't even really need tokens. We just did theater of the mind the whole time. And it was amazing. It was vivid. I still remember what happened. I can relive it. And it was role-playing. I think it's all about how you use the tool. I've always kind of been an advocate of, or I've always sort of preached, it's not the tool, it's how you use it. You know, you could massage someone with a sledgehammer if you were really careful. But it's true. I mean, what you're saying is totally true. Like, there's no way to... Some people will always want to be live, and there's nothing that I'm going to say about it. I'm not going to try to convince them. You know, I played at a bar with a group that was running, and they all were like, yeah, we don't play online. We like getting together, having beer, playing together. Mm-hmm. Got it. Totally. And then there's people who play online every day of the week, and they love it. So I think it's just style and taste. And I don't think a VTT gets in the way of any of the pillars of any role-playing game. I think you can completely role-play. You can explore. You can do combat live. You can do it online. It's just different.
Yeah. It's like it's social encounters, combat encounters, and exploration, right? It's the three pillars. I'm just to get it right. But Katie, what are your experience with this, like, investigation, like Curse of Strahd? Was that easier for you at a table, or it's easier for you online?
Playing online for a lot of reasons, like kind of having all those tools on hand, being able to bring up the handouts, kind of like what we're talking about. And I actually find it easier to run online because, or maybe I've just gotten so used to it, but when the players are talking to an NPC and they say something that is just so off the wall that I might start laughing, but as I am not sharing my camera, I can mute my mic, laugh a little bit, and then go on with the roleplay scene. And I like that aspect of it, but also, as I said before, when you play online, you have, you know, Discord or some kind of voice or text media set up for that. My players have sent messages to each other in between sessions talking about what do they want to do, where do they want to go next, what are their goals. So again, they're kind of fostering that relationship outside of the game, and I think that makes for a better game overall. You know, when I run games in person, those people don't really text each other between sessions. They show up, they play, they leave, they do whatever during the week, they come back. They really only invest time when we are playing, which is fine. Again, that's just like a game style, but for an online game, the Discord is always there. You know, if you have the app on your phone, you could text somebody while you're out and about or at work or whatever. And, you know, just 15 minutes a day or 15 minutes each week in between sessions can really add to the role play, the characters' relationships with each other, and the players' relationships with each other. So I think running online games has been better in my experience.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I have to dive into that again maybe. So let's see. But yeah, it's hard for me to see where the VTT or the online gaming for me are just the combat and exploration games. I've tried to figure out that's pretty easy. That's great, but again, I have hard time to connect with my players, like the emotional level and also I love to make handouts that are touchable. Sure. That's pretty hard. Sure. through the screen. I'd like to use handouts that smells of stuff and so that's it's pretty difficult for me to give my players all that I used to give them. So it's that in that framework that I have some difficulty to really engage me in online game. But I have a group in Copenhagen. I live in another part of Denmark, and we play each second week Fallout because we live like 300 kilometers from each other. So we play like three or four sessions online, and then we meet up either here or in Copenhagen, and we play real time a few hours, and then again. So each second month or so. So that's our setup, and we will try to figure out how to use the VTT on a better and connect, so I can connect better to my players. It's a necessity more than an enjoyable thing for me. But it's I will try to to learn from you guys for sure, and I hope my listeners also will do this. But D&D is the big beast in this environment.
It is.
There's like 1% of other games, and then 99% of D&D out there of such roughly, especially on the VTT platforms, on the online gaming platforms, and also Adventures Unbound. You have solely focused on the D&D's part. Is D&D this so great for this online gaming, because D&D is very good for combat and exploration, because it's not like 99% of, like, okay, 80% of the game are about combat, and so
no,
the system if you check all the rules out, and that's, it's like 80% of it are focused around combat, or skills that come around combat, spells around combat, and so on. I think that's it's about that, in that, and that's fine. It's what the game is about, and it's like Gygax is that who wants to make the game like that. I don't know if is for combat, right?
I hear you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of rules.
That's a lot of rules.
Luckily, you don't need to know all of them to play.
as a DM, you have to know all the rules. I've experienced, so yeah. So, but yeah. So D&D is this so great for this game? I know there's a lot of other exploration combat games, like the OSR scene have developed a lot of cool games now that are pretty easy to run. But what's your, have you tried anything else online than D&D?
Oh yeah, I mean, I know Katie has. In fact, Katie ran. Is it called Where Is Alice?
Alice is missing.
Alice is missing, right? And we played with a bunch of the DMs from Unbounded. She ran Alice is Missing for us, and it was wonderful. And
what is that?
Oh, I'll describe it. I mean, I could describe it as a player.
What's the concept?
Alice is Missing is a silent role-playing game where after you spend 30 to 60 minutes talking and setting up the characters, the Alice that is central to the story, and the town of Silent Falls where the story is taking place, the rest of the game, 90 minutes, so there's a timer, 90 minutes is spent silently texting the other players, fully embodying your character. You play as teenagers in Silent Falls who are investigating the disappearance of their friends. And over the course of 90 minutes, clues are revealed through cards, and I ran it on Foundry, so I have kind of a special system set up. And you reveal clues, you reveal locations, you reveal suspects, and at the end of 90 minutes, you find out if Alice is alive and hurt, alive and okay, or dead.
Listen, as a player who had no idea how this works, she says there's 30 to 60 minutes of getting it all set up. For me, it was 30 to 60 minutes of trying to understand what was about to happen and still having no idea what was about to happen. And then it started and immediately makes sense. And immediately I'm turning into this teenager and I'm texting my friends. And it is a crazy, clever game. And there's a random mechanic on how these cards are revealed and how they're used and incorporated into the role playing that's happening live in a group chat and in private chat, and we did it all on Discord, and it was incredible. It was so fascinating. And yeah, there was no map, there was no nothing. It was just role playing, but there was dice rolls. There were a couple dice rolls. What was your original question? Is D&D the thing to do online, or the thing for
Advanced? Yeah, it's the most easy way to play games is, for me, like combat exploration games, and and the social encounters. So the three pillars are easy to, and D&D have set up this system to adjust around these three pillars for gaming, right?
Yeah.
And combat exploration is so easy, and Foundry of course made it a lot easier when they put in the system that Roll20 have this as well and so on. But have you run any other games than D&D in the online game, Eric?
I have not.
No. You have not tried to...
Actually, I ran a session of... I tried a session of Eclipse, which is a sci-fi one. For a while, I was working on getting a starter adventure made for it for Astral Tabletop that was for Eclipse. I also did one for Scion, which is... I did dabble a little bit in those. I made the maps, and I did run some adventure as a test of those. But I mean, I think what you're really asking is why D&D? Why not any of these others, right? Like, there's so many. It's a rich world of RPGs. Why D&D? And honestly, it's just D&D, regardless of which system you pick, it doesn't matter to me. What matters is, are the stories engaging? Do players have an experience of playing a story, feeling they're a part of the story? Are they becoming a hero? Are they having, you know, traumas and triumphs? And that's, D&D's great at that. So are others, but D&D's great at it. And when you add the fact that D&D can do that for you to the fact that there's so many dungeon masters out there that want somewhere to run their story, and there's so many players that typically hear of D&D. They don't hear about Tales of the, what is it called? Powered by the Apocalypse. They don't hear about that stuff. They don't hear about Scion and Eclipse. They hear about Dungeons and Dragons. They watch Stranger Things and they hear of D&D. Or they had a brother or a sister who plays D&D. And so being the system of D&D is just a simple way of saying, come play. And do we expect people to eventually explore outward? Sure. Of course.
And yeah, so for me, it's online gaming is the, I have the best experience when I play run D&D online, because it's so easy for me to make the combat exploration part and dungeon crawling and so on. It's easy. And also I just ran the Dark Sun campaign, the old D&D second edition Dark Sun campaign setting, where I used the Forbidden Lands rules from Free League, where it's also very OSR like. So I know where you're, why this is great for the combat exploration social encounter kind of games. So yeah, for sure. Cool, guys. But you actually contacted me, Katie, because of your venture into a Adventure Unbound website you try to launch shortly after this talk. So what is up with that, Katie, and why, let's talk about that website and the platform. Okay, yeah, so let's hear it. All right. Why would you want to start this up?
I mean, simply put, yeah, it's not about the website. It's really just the overarching concept comes from, like I said, there was some like, wouldn't it be cool if, and it's a couple main things. And it comes from, there's the player side, which is, I had the experience of looking for a game to play online, and it's overwhelming, right? There's so many DMs. And there's an entire like marketplace of paid DMs that you can go and you try to figure out who to play with. And if you're looking for a serious campaign, not just a one shot, you know, it can be a real hit or miss kind of experience of, you know, I find a DM and they're not my style. They're good. They're just not my style. So I try another DM, and then it's the DM's great, but they're kind of flaky. No offense, but some of them, you know, they forget to show up, or they, you know, they call out. Or you find the perfect DM, but like the party that is playing with you is not the party you want to play with. So wouldn't it be cool if there was a world of D&D where it's a consistent set of DMs, like a wide variety of DMs that are all available within the same world? So you make one character and play in that world. And if you want to move to another DM, cool. And if you want to stay with the same one, cool. And if you want to stay with the party you're with, cool. And if you want to meet other people, you travel around. Just like it's the real world, and you take a vacation to Australia if you can afford it, or you take a car trip to a nearby town. You know, what if D&D was more like a full world and not just a single DM running a single game? So from the player side, that's the idea. from the DM side, there's all these DMs.
It's just like the D&D Society, what it's called, eventually.
You could do that,
right? It's like
you could do that, yeah, and you
it's
can
much like that.
Well, no. I want to say no. I want to say we're different.
Very
important ways we're different from some people compared. When they hear of it at first, they think, oh, you're doing West Marches or oh, you're doing Adventures League. And the answer is no. It really isn't that.
For me, it's like it's a morphing of Adventure League and West Marches kind of. It's like we want to, we can GM, everybody on the round the table can GM on second times or so on, but it's the same world every time and the same characters every time and so on. So it's more.
Yeah, just. But Jacob, now picture there's 30 DMs running their own campaigns all in the same world. And those campaigns can cross over each other and have plot lines together. There can be plot hooks in one that tie to another person's campaign. It's a collaboratively hosted, gigantic, expanded version of what you're saying. Yeah.
It's a huge Westworld. Huge Westworld Adventure League kind of...
There's that thing where you're playing and you know, like the DM takes you to a town and there's like a random NPC sitting on a bench and you know, they only exist for your party. When you leave, you know, you have a really good DM. They remember that NPC, but really like the whole town more or less fades out when you're not in that town. You know, it's not got a life of its own unless the DM needs it to like have had something happen while you were away. But if you have 30 DMs in a world and one party goes to town and burns down the inn, that inn is burned down when the next party shows up to that town. It's a living world. And I love that idea. I love the idea of having it be more of a fully lived in world to explore and to play in and to follow your whims.
Yeah. And the setting you created, Katie, how much have you been in the... in the kitchen and cooking in this setting?
Yeah, so we actually are creating our whole own setting from scratch. And one of the amazing things about Adventure Unbounded has been that collaborative effort that we've had. So we've bounced ideas off each other. We have teams who can name things. We have people to, you know, work through problems. I personally was suffering from writer's block earlier this year, and I would get on our Discord server and just be like, hey, anybody available to chat? And I'd chat with Eric or I'd chat with Topher of our different people from our DM teams, and I started getting ideas, and my block is gone now because I was able to collaborate with my team to find those ideas, to get my mojo back, as it were. And yeah, I just spit out a bunch of random ideas, and some people are picking them up. Sometimes they sit on the table, but that's been an amazing feature that we've had this, you know, DM support network. You know, when I run Curse of Strahd, I get really excited about all the lore and the backstory and this huge thing, but like, there's nobody to tell that to. I can't tell the players because that's secret. I'm just lore dumping on them. They don't want that. But with the other DMs in Adventure Unbounded, we can geek out about our world. We can get excited about it together, make things together. And it's been an amazing experience.
Yeah, it's a great idea to share. I've been dual DMing a lot and sharing your adventure ideas or whatever with another person is just so fulfilling most of the time. It's not just war stories in the bar at some convent because it's we are collecting stories here, right? So, and you guys have created this environment, so this boiler room, so you can put all the ideas in and try to figure out what sticks to the wall, right? So, but you will take you. You, the concept. Oh, I've read some of the setting. I'm sorry. I'm not read all the setting, but it's it's for me. It's like it's very generic fantasy, but there's a lot of lore you have created, of course, and it's taking from the player's handbook mostly. Like it's not so. How much did you want to keep into the borders of D&D so there would be recognizable things in it, like elves and dwarves and whatever dragonkins and whatever. And what did you want to make from scratch, like really original stuff, like a ooze monster or whatever? I don't know. so the recognition versus the the original stuff. That's most where I see D&D. Like, it's just another D&D setting. It's just Greyhawk or Forgotten Realms in with another flavor. What did you pick out from D&D to use, and what did you want to not use or bring to the table that were different in this setting?
Yeah, so I'll say that the overarching mantra for everyone working on Adventure Unbounded for the world was to constantly think of creating a flexible framework for any DM to enter and add their own spin on, flavor, whatever. So what we had to agree on, if you're going to have 30 DMs, and right now it's like 8 or 9 DMs, but if you're going to have even 3 DMs work together in the same world, you do need to agree on the basic rules we're going to play by, the rules of the world, the playable races, you know, the character creation has to be the same. So we stuck very much with D&D rules for character creation. You can make a character and play. If you have never played D&D, you follow the instructions. If you've played D&D, you follow the instructions you already know, you make a character. Our setting is actually pretty unique, I think, but I'm not going to leak it all out over the internet. But I will say, in terms of what was unique is, for example, in our world, the quote gods of the world are called the Faceless. There are 12 of them. They are completely homebrewed flavor. They have their own holidays. They have their descriptions. They have their, you know, what their domains are, and, you know, clerics can tie to them, all that. But the design of Faceless is, if you were a DM and you joined it as one of the DMs of Adventure Unbounded, and you're really into the Greco-Roman gods or the, you know, the Egyptian gods, you want to bring Ra, the whatever, Lord of Light, they can dress up as one of the Faceless. So there's room to bring traditional D&D stuff or outside world stuff in, because there's a sort of placeholder version of that. You can find a way to bring them in. They're allowed. It's a very flexible framework. There are things that are absolutely unique to Adventure Unbounded that I'm sworn to secrecy and can't tell you about that work in the world, they don't exist anywhere that we've ever seen. But it all just fits within the greater context of, you still can play D&D by the rules. You can make characters by the rules, and magic works the same way. The rules are the rules. But that doesn't mean you can't do all these things that reflavor and bend and add and expand on it.
Yeah. Because it's difficult for you when you try to draw in D&D players, then you cannot change too much of the, especially the rules, but also the flavor of elves, or because there's some abilities connected to elves, and these abilities are connected to elves because of the lore of the original D&D things. They can see in the dark and use whatever abilities and so on. So there's a lot of rules within the lore of the races and the classes and so on. So there's a lot of structure that are prohibited to touch on for you as a creator. For me, some of the most fun or best setting for me are where the D&D settings are getting original, where Ravenloft, for example, it's a different flavor, and especially my favorite setting, like Dark Sun, is the completely different way to look at races, and all the tropes have been turned upside down and so on. So you have some difficulty to create something completely original, but of course you can put in a lot of lore, like the guards, the Faceless one, as you said, and of course some of the characters, and maybe you can mix up some new magic spells or whatever, a new school, or you have you have a lot of and a lot of the lore around D&D is like the ethereal, as you said, the planes are fixed in D&D as well, so you have a lot of rules in, because they are connected to the spell books, or the spells in the system. So yeah, so that's a lot of difficulty for creators to create something completely original without make it to totally new for outside players, right?
Although I will say we've done quite a bit of variations. I'll take one example without giving away too much detail. Like, for example, the centaurs in our world have a completely different lore and backstory that fits our world, not the D&D backstory. but it still gives them the same centaur abilities when they make a character. It doesn't mess up, you know, what it is to be a centaur. It just changes their backstory.
Yeah, yeah. And you can also focus on that some of the races are more more spread out than in normal D&D settings,
yeah.
Like humans.
Right.
Humans are not the primary race. This is the dwarfs.
Right.
The dwarf world, and humans lives in
right.
the mountains and whatever. You can mix up the races, like geographic or demeanor as such. But some of the things are fixed for you, so you can, so players can sit down at tables like, what the. An elf like this in this world, yeah, it is. So you have to make your characters like that and that, and then they will lose interest if they want to have classic D&D, for example.
Right. Although I don't know if you know, so in 5e, some of the more interesting modern developments with 5e D&D is that they've really made the races far more flexible.
Yeah, because
you can really, you know, you can really have these kind of custom backgrounds, and you know. There's a lot more fluidity.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
That isn't tied to being an elf or a dwarf anymore. You know, you can have some of these traits.
Yeah, yeah, it's like
that are typically only in these, or that these guys don't have.
Yeah.
See, D&D has often, you know, opened that up quite a bit.
Of course, and it's from the 3.5 concept that it's most flexible, and if it was so still as like first edition or second edition D&D, it would be it has to be a hell's show to make anything original, right? Because it's a elf has a +1 to a longsword, and that's it. And so we want to have all our elves using longswords and bows, right? So it's gotta be boring. So and the setting as such, as we talked about, but also the GMing in this world, as you told and touched on just before, it's, you have this boiler room of ideas you want to impose on the GMs, so you can create this environment and options for the GMs. How would you, what kind of GMs do we want to seek out for this?
Can I answer that, Katie? I know, I feel like I've talked a little more than Katie
for
a minute.
But of course.
I'm one of the primary hirers of the DMs, and I know what I'm looking for when I hire it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is going to sound crazy, all right? So obviously they have to be able to run a decent D&D game.
Yeah.
I'm open to almost any flavor.
Yeah.
But what really is important is they have to be a team player.
Yeah.
They have to be someone that wants to be part of a collaborative, non-competitive version of running D&D with a bunch of other DMs.
Yeah.
And so the audition for Adventure Unbounded is you organize a one-shot with some of your friends and invite me and one other player from Unbounded, you know, my lead DM.
Yeah.
We will play with you for a one-shot. We'll kind of get a sense of your style.
Yeah.
And here's the key. Jacob, it's really just at the end of the session, we give feedback.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't think that that would be the key to an interview, but it really
mm-hmm.
is. How a DM takes feedback,
yeah.
tells me everything about whether they're fit for this world.
Yeah.
If, because we want DMs that want to grow, even if they've been DMing for 25 years, if they don't think they have room for growth and they don't want feedback, they're not going to do well in an environment that's going to get a lot of feedback, both because it's professional and you have players who are paying, but also feedback from each other so that we can help each other grow. It really is a support group for DMs.
Yeah.
And you have to want a support group and be willing to take the support
yeah.
to be able to be a part of a support group. And so we've had, I'm not kidding, more than one DM who was fully excited to be a part of this and was engaging and was even starting to work on the lore team or whatever and all that. And then they did their audition and they got some feedback. And we're not mean. The feedback is usually like, this was great. Really loved how you did that. Here's something you might want to think about. Like, here's something that sometimes happens, and here's another way you could try that.
Yeah.
It's a very supportive version of feedback, but literally the next day they dropped. They were like, I don't think this is for me.
No.
And that's all I need to know.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine, because we have a great team.
Yeah.
And it's been, Katie, what's it been? Like a year and a half almost?
Yeah, something like that. I think I joined Unbounded around this time last year.
Yeah.
Okay. So year and a half, and this team works together really well. They play off each other, they coach each other, they support each other. There's disagreements. We resolve them. I mean, it's a very functional team working on how do you host such an unwieldy project. The whole reason West Marches exists is because it's a very simplified approach when you want to handle something bigger. And we wanted to kind of approach it like, well, what if we don't dumb it down? What if we don't make it everything's a one shot and everything goes back to a home base every time? Yeah. What if it's this prescribed set of things? What if it's really DMs running their stories,
yes,
but next to other DMs running their stories and even mixing their stories together and having multiple stories that merge? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great to create this environment that you give feedback and see how players operate. It's of course an addition, and then you can amp up your game in that game if you really want to be, but you can easily pick out the details from a GM when giving the feedback and see beyond that. It's just the addition thing. I love this analogy from Metallica, where they want to have Eddie Trulio in as a bassist, the new bassist, and they just look at each other. This guy only played as 70%. He still have 30%. We want this guy because he was so good. So they knew that he wasn't playing full out audition. That was just his. It's fine. It's just another Wednesday, whatever. And when you can do this, and you have the experience, of course, now to see the details in the feedback and how they react on it and so on, as you said. So that's pretty cool to have this. I'd like to touch on the payment part, because in Denmark we are. More socialistic approach to and we have a discussion in our local Facebook pages and so on, like role playing, and there are very few people in Denmark that have the strength and the abilities to demand money for role playing games. That's not a thing in Denmark at all, and we have some talks on it, and we have some guys that have played in the US and UK and come back to Denmark and say, hey, I want to build up a group. You can pay like $30 to play my group. And that was just like, oh, never in happening. It's never going to be happening.
Right.
So
that's not just Denmark. That's all over.
Yeah. But in Denmark, it doesn't exist in Denmark. I know in Germany it exists, in the UK it exists. I've talked to professional GMs all over the world. So what is your thoughts on this, and how to recognize, of course, you have a platform that have to draw in some money, but also the GMs have to be paid and so on. What is your thoughts on paying for this? It's like I see it like it paying for entertainment, like going to the movies. But sure. But then if I sit down as a player at a table, I will demand so much that I will maybe disconnect from the game as such, because I want to demand something from my players, not only my GM, but also the players around me. How do you help the GM to get all the players engaged to each other and so on in a paying environment? Because it is an issue, right?
I'll let Katie start with that.
Yeah.
So, in my experience, yeah, there is pushback against paid DMing. But from what I've seen, it's mostly people who've played with their friends and who have never had a problem finding people to play with, scheduling a game session, having DMs drop out at the last minute, or anything like this.
Yes.
Those people have consistent game groups, friends, or a place to play physically. That's wonderful. However, not everyone is so lucky.
No.
So with the Adventure Unbounded, we build the groups for everybody. You know, when people come in to pay to play, they know that they're going to have a party, they're going to have a DM, they're going to have a great time, and it's going to start on time. It's going to be consistent. You know, these are the features that I think our customers and our players are really going to enjoy. And I've run paid games outside of Adventure Unbounded, and this is kind of what I've seen. When I've joined free games, the DM is late, they cancel suddenly, or the game stops entirely. Just suddenly, like, we've had four sessions and the campaign's over.
Yeah.
Like, that's an unfun experience.
Yeah.
And from what we've seen, the biggest thing people want to do is play. They just want to play. They don't want to have to worry about scheduling or DMs or conflicts or whatever. So with the service that we provide, we offer many sessions throughout the week. You can pick the session that works for you, and you know you're going to have a fantastic time. And from the player's perspective, you know that everyone else has also paid to be there. So everyone's bringing their A game, everyone's showing up on time, everyone's, you know, focused and committed because there's literally money down. I think this creates actually a much more dedicated player. From my experience, people who show up on time, ready to play, characters ready, all that good stuff, because they put money in it. So it means more to them, and I've just had a much better experience every time I've run a paid game versus even just trying to play as a free player. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah, I think it's a great point to see how to... we have a discussion in the LARP environment in Denmark where also the prices for a great scenario, like a weekend scenario, is like 300 or 500 euros, right? So there's a lot of money involved. So you have to bring your A game, as you say, Katie, and demand that on the players around you as well, not only for the DM but also the players around you, right? So it's a good point to have the monetary part of the game be a leverage into securing a great experience for everybody around the table, right? So
I completely agree with that. And I just want to add that another aspect that is important to me is, I don't know how it is in every country in the world, but I'm in the United States, and I recognize that the people who want to make money, they do not generally go into art or social work or service of you can make a lot of money being a lawyer. And I'm not against lawyers. It's great. Go be a lawyer, a doctor, etc. But there's just not the same financial value put on things like teachers and artists. And I come from a massage therapy background, and I've managed massage therapists for years. And it's funny, but with D&D, when I started running the game, people often don't realize how much work a dungeon master puts into a single session. We're thinking about it, we're dreaming it, we're writing all these notes up, we're coming up with plots and NPCs and maps and hours and hours of creative work goes into providing a 3 or 4 hour session. And that goes to have that ongoing for free, power to you. If you have a friend that's doing it, great, I love that. That's amazing. But like Katie said, it is of value. It is something that is being provided for the players that is, I believe, worth money. People should be able to be paid if they are really consistently providing that value. And so this is an environment that says, don't pay a single DM, don't try to shop 50 different DMs. The idea is we wanted to make like a safe space for people to play, where you're paying just to be able to play once a week or twice a week or three times a week. And that wherever you play, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. And you can change your schedule and play on a different day. But the argument for paying is to secure a place, to have a home where you can play D&D reliably when you want and have it consistently be, accountable and good.
Yeah, and it's a great point, Eric, because it's taking this, like a platform as you were, there's no shame into linking into a game and paying whatever and taking this to a table and say, okay, hey guys, we want to play, this is the way to play, we play online, blah blah blah. As you said, the players that are always players doesn't know how much work there is into being a DM. For me, it's like handouts, it's like sound handouts, it's video handouts, it's coming up with the story and finding inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah.
so on. Not only for single scenarios for a convention or so on, but also a campaign. It's a huge work.
Nice.
It's fine to see. Okay, if you have some friends that like to be a GM, as I have a lot of friends that are GMing, but also myself, I won't take money from my friends playing. I play with them in 20 years. Like, say, I'm coming at your house and we want to play this game, like 500 crowns each to engage with this. But they won't come, right? So what the fuck? And they probably won't talk to me anymore afterwards.
Totally, yeah, no, it's not. So, you know, you don't go pro with your friends.
No, that's the issue in the Danish community, because it's more friendship. Like, when we create a group, it's like, okay, I know this guy and this guy. Do you want to be a GM for my group? Sure. Then I will be GM for friends of a friends of a friends group, right? So I know one of them in the group, and then the three others in the group, I don't know those, only by my friends' relations, right? So right. Sitting down with the table, like, okay, you have to pay 200 crowns and you have to pay 300 crowns and whatever, because I don't know you that well. So it's just a weird power struggle. Actually, it's more that for me. I get it.
And Jacob, honestly, that's another reason Adventure Unbounded came into existence. Yep. I said there was also thoughts from the DM side, and it is hard to go pro when you're a DM, right? I mean, there's so many downsides to trying to go pro. First, you're going up against that sentiment that, like, it should just be free. You should just do this for me because you like to do it. Okay, cool. But I want to do it and I want to get paid for it. I don't want to only do it for my friends. I wouldn't mind making a little bit of a side living or even a full-time living at it. Well, now what? Now you have to spend all this energy on marketing yourself and hustling, which is not creative and fun. It's not what a DM wants to do, you know? And so this can help take some of that. You know, a DM doesn't have to hustle now. Now a DM is in this world. Players are in this world for you. Just be the DM. I wanted to take that away.
Yeah, I talked to Andreas from the podcast Sweden Rolls. If you know that podcast, it's an actual play podcast where they use professional actors in the actual play podcast.
Right.
So and very great production value in it. But Andreas is a nerd like us and wants to play, but he doesn't have the time to play role playing without getting paid for it. He doesn't have the time for it. He has a family and he has his real job, and he has to bring out his hand and say, guys, you have to bring something to the table. And that's the problem with it. It was outside our outline, that's my curiosity around surrounding that it's a conundrum for me to figure out how to frame this, because it's our hobby. It's like, as you said, the artist, the work around it, and how to get paid for it, if you need to get paid for it. Is it a hobby? When is it a hobby? When is it a job? It's the boundaries between those understandings is also a real thing, right? But the setting, let's get back to the setting, because we were touching about, but more the mood of the setting. It's more, as I said in the outline, is it more like Critical Role kind of mood,
right,
or
right.
It's more Ravenloft Dark Fantasy kind of mood, or even darker, like called Divinity Lost or something like that. It's a really dark role-playing game.
I think, Katie, you can answer this just as good as I can, and I want to hear your more than mine. So.
Well, I think that there's room for all of that in our setting. So we've run stories that were more lighthearted. Some of the DMs had plot lines that were, you know, a bit more fun, set in a fun city or what have you. And we've had plot lines that were a bit darker, where people were going missing or, you know, like livestock was being kidnapped, things like that. Of course, you know, my heart lives with the horror genre. So I am planning on using themes and notes like that in my game, in the games that I'm going to be running for Unbounded. But I think one of the wonderful things, like we've kind of talked about, is the framework that we've set up, where every DM has the opportunity to tell the stories that they want to tell. We can bounce ideas off each other and share ideas and things like that, but at the end of the day, you know, you're the final say in your campaign. So I'm planning something that's a little bit more spooky. Other people might be planning something that's a bit more fun or lighthearted, more, you know, toward that kind of Critical Role side of things. But we have a spectrum, you know, we have room for all of it.
Yeah, that's to me maybe the issue for me, that if I want to be a player in this platform, I cannot. Do you announce this for the GM, like a scale for the GMs, like, okay, I'm more pulpy, I'm more dark fantasy kind of scale, or what? It's because it's, and also the setting as whole, because it's, yeah, it's if one village is like Funny Joy Joy with the bubbles and whatever, and the next village is like dark with the lich mayor and so on, that's some flavor things there that can be confusing for players. How do you formulate this for the GM that create the world but also create scenarios for you in the world? How do you want to approach this?
Yeah, well, so there's two things that are important, and I just want to say it's really important to say that one thing we do is we have every player fill out a consent checklist of topics and themes, how they feel about them as being part of a game. Are they comfortable with them, or would it be a little bit like, do we need to put a line and veil in place? Do we need to literally not bring up that thing because it's extremely triggering for some people, whereas other people are like, yeah, whatever. We know, all the DMs know what are the sensitive topics and areas and themes for every player that they're playing with that night, so that they can accommodate and make sure it feels safe for everyone to play. That said, if you have a group that's willing to go dark and creepy and horror and brutal, and you have a DM that is ready to do that, they're going to say what their style is. When you sign up for a game with Aaron or with Ernesto or with Katie, it'll have a description of, you know, what level of intensity that is. We do have a simple way of saying, you know, here's that kind of game. It's a little bit about this. So if you're going to play with me on Thursday afternoon, that's what this storyline is happening right now. That's what's going on. And then, you know, the DMs have an awareness of what they have to be careful with and whether they're just free to, you know, poke people's eyeballs out and stuff like that. So,
yeah, so make sure labeling it correctly so the players know where it is. But also if you want to change up GMs, if you want to, okay, this right. Tuesday I want to try to you, Eric, and next Tuesday I want to try Katie. But also the presentation of the setting are vastly different for me if these things are allowed in the world, like in the Dragonlance Kendar, for example. If you know the Dragonlance setting, they are very funny psychic kind of fun, right? And then you look at the Dark Sun setting where halflings each are cannibalisms, right? so there's some tones and mixtures and mood that can be very difficult for players to decipher what kind of setting this is. Is this a thing you have in mind, or do you have some, okay, there's this framework, not too many pink bubbles and funny blah blah, and not too many poking out eyeballs with your fist kind of thing. What do you have some boundaries for the lore, especially, but also
we have permanent boundaries. There's a few things that are permanently off, not going to happen in this world. An example: there will be no sexual assault in this entire world of Unbounded. There's no need for it, in our opinion, as a team. It is not something we need to fantasize about or glorify or, you know, bring up directly. There's plenty of that in the world, and we don't need to have a fantasy setting where we go explore sexual assault. So, as an example, that's not going to be in the game, no matter what game. But beyond that, I don't think it's actually going to be that confusing. The model here is, this is a world, not a campaign. It's a world. So like in this world, I can go out in my town, I can go to a bar where there's punk rock, and I can go to a bar where there's acoustic jazz. And I know, like I can see, like, oh, this bar has acoustic jazz and this coffee house is having a poetry night. And it's my choice to be like, I want to go check out poetry night tonight. That doesn't make me confused about the town I'm in. It just tells me I'm in a town. And this world is designed that way. This is a world.
Yeah, it's yeah, but also with it, I see like there's so many different races in D&D, right? So there's also a, like, a framing which kind of races you are and what kind of the relation to each of the races are based on the lore of the game. But if the GM haven't just autopilot the lore from normal D&D, so there can be some difficulty there. But it's great you have some framework that sets, okay, this is, there's some no-goes, and of course you have a session zero with your players, or at least some labeling, so your players can choose and pick and choose games that are suited for their own mentality in the game. So that's such a great way to do it, I think, because it's important for, I have always a session zero with my players, what is the expectation, of course, lights and veils and so on, safety mechanics and so on, but some players find this stupid, so
in our world it's required. In Unbounded, when you join Unbounded, there's an introductory session. It's actually two sessions. You get your session zero, which is an orientation to the world, a character support and background creation, but a lot of talking out all this stuff, explaining how it all works, and then a mini one-shot to give you a flavor for playing your character, which is a designed to take you into the actual world of Unbounded, and then it includes your first play session in Unbounded. And we kind of play the tour guide and help you find like a good session to start with for you. So that, yeah, it's crucial. And I understand some people don't want to go through an orientation or whatever, but we try to make it of value and just a part of the coming into the world.
Yeah. It's been a fight for me to make players understand that these things are pretty important for me and for the game to make it secure for the players, of course, but also give them the best experience and also give them something they can be afraid of. If I run a lot of horror games, like Call of the Vengeance Lost and Wasteland so it's important for me to know what buttons I can touch on to scare you, Eric, or Katie, or whatever. So it's a conversation to have with your players, of course, and what we want to experience as well in the campaign, right? So So it's like a meta discussion we have around the table. So as a D&D setting, and Adventures Unbound, could you make a platform bystanding with some other games, or is this a thing that are in the future, Eric, or whatever?
Well, I hope so. I mean, obviously, the first thing is get this working well and have players enjoying it and DMs enjoying it and have it grow. Obviously, we want people to play and have a great time, and that's, you know, it'll grow on its own. We it's not about, you know, multi-million-dollar marketing. It's about people hearing about a really cool thing and then trying it and finding it is a cool thing. But if it grows to the point where it's stable and DMs are being paid to do the thing they love and they're having a really positive experience working with the group and the players are having a really good experience and we have a world happening, yes, there is phase two and phase three. And I'm interested in, first of all, having another version of Adventure Unbounded for the youth, for, you know, the under 18 crowd, especially for, you know, younger people to play. It's not appropriate to bring 12 and 13-year-olds into this world. No, with a bunch of adults playing D&D. This particular world is designed as an adult, 18 and plus. But I'd like to have a young version. And then, of course, it's really just a framework for how do DMs or GMs work together. It's not about D&D at all. It's just a way of how can we solve the problems of a large pool of players playing with a large pool of game masters in a large story setting. And so, yeah, I would love to see it grow and get to the point where there's a Pathfinder 1 and a Call of Cthulhu and a Cyber Red and you name it, whatever. Yeah, Adventure Unbounded.
Yeah, when you open up for other games, I'm in for it. So
you'll be the first to invite.
Yeah, sure. not Pathfinder, but some less crunchier games. I'm in for it for sure.
You got it.
I'm a rules idiot. That's my flaw. In And as you said, the next thing you want to expand on the younger crowd and so on, and we talked on how you seek out these GMs and what kind of GMs you want. It's of course experienced GMs in D&D settings, and of course taking the feedback is so key for you, for sure. And of course you picked up Katie and some other GMs on the way, so it's pretty cool. So
yeah, she's amazing.
Yeah, and yeah, it's so Katie, touch on the last thing here. What could be better for you as a GM to touch on for Eric?
Well, the only thing that could make Adventure Unbounded better for me was if I had more time in my schedule. I would love to run more games in Adventure Unbounded and offer tons of variety. You know, now, like I said, now that my writer's block is gone, I've got all these, you know, wheels turning in my head. Ooh, what if this happened? Ooh, what if then? And then, and I love these ideas. I'm happy to share them with my fellow DMs. I'd love to run campaigns with them. But unfortunately, my schedule is so full and I have family commitments and things like that. But the other thing is, I would really love to see Adventure Unbounded grow. I would love to have more DMs to collaborate with and really build on our best feature, which is our support group.
So you need a clone. That's what you need from me.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So yeah, but Eric, you touched on before we recorded here that the website is not fully running and stable yet. But it's in the pipeline for opening up entirely for new players, right?
Yeah, it should be either this month or next month we're going to have it live. So we have a website. If you go to it, it's a website we launched for the beta run. We ran a beta test of this with about 5 or 6 DMs for about 4 months to make sure it really did work. And you know what? It did work. and so you can get a feel for it a lot from the website. You can get a feel for how we think about all of this. But yeah, the real website has to be able to take obviously subscriptions and individual payments and booking, and well, that's mainly it, is we need to be able to have the booking system in place and the subscription system in place. The goal is to have it be subscription based. People already we priced it really right in line with what people pay pro DMs already. It's just instead of paying it once a week, you could choose to pay once a month. That's really the only difference. Yeah, and then really just play every week or play twice a week or whatever.
The OGL drama
coming soon.
Yeah, good or bad for other games than D&D. Yeah. That's a pretty cool idea.
Good.
It was very good for other games.
Yeah. Okay, so that's a sure yes. Okay. Is AI, art, and chat GPT a net positive for role-playing?
Yes, net positive.
For role playing, I'm gonna take a mixed view. I have very strong objections to the way it's being used internally, but man, if you can't afford art, mm-hmm. and you want to have amazing art for your D&D games and your role playing games, yes, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So you know, I had to put a caveat in. That's not a yes. No.
We'll take it as yes. So. And this last question is pretty easy for you. Is the post-COVID online gaming a net positive for role-playing games?
Positive.
Oh, yeah.
That was an easy one for you. I don't want to unfold that. listen to the episode instead. So, yeah, let's talk about this AI, because I just created this game called Jungle Teeth. It's the system, the Free League system, Ancient Zero rules, whatever. But we want to give this free for players, and we want some art for it, but then we saw what artists want to give to take for art, and that's totally fine, but we didn't want to earn anything on this product in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So we took that very radical choice to use the AI art, and what's your thought on this, Katie? You were like a net positive kind of. You were pretty good of answering yes and no.
So I know that these AI art generators have seen some controversy.
Mm-hmm.
What I have dabbled, and what I do is try to generate an image to spark my imagination.
Yeah.
And then the same with, like, the ChatGP, which I've recently gone into as well, to get inspiration from them. So use them as an inspiration tool. I think with anything, it can be, if you use it right, tools can be positive. I do hear creators who are upset if their images are used in data sets that they didn't consent to. I definitely hear that. But I like to think of them as a starting point.
Yeah.
And then if you can go from there, you know, move away from the AI stuff and make your own thing. Not all of us are blessed with the gift of drawing or painting.
No.
Even with the ChatGP, it's been an interesting thing for me to try and generate ideas and then spiral off of it a bit. So, you know, you can put in D&D adventure and it will give you like a synopsis.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll use this piece or that piece or, you know, what have you. Or you're like, no, I don't like any of that. You can generate a new prompt, you know, from the ChatGP and get a different idea. So I think for generating ideas and starting off, I think that they're a great tool for that.
Yeah, for sure. So like, you were a bit more wavery about your answer. How do you feel about this art? As you said, to create something and put it out there without art or with AI art, that's the option for a product like mine. It's like a blank A4 page, all beautiful art with the characters and so on and so on. So what's your thought on this as a developer, as you are?
Yeah, so look, at the very moment we're talking,
mm-hmm.
It's beautiful and wonderful, and it gives all this art and makes it accessible to make your product better and my product better, everybody's product better. It gives ways of getting inspiration. And by the way, I don't mind the chatbot. I'm not scared of that thing at all. It's fine. I love it. I love AI. The problem that I'm worried about with the AI image generators is, if you are an artist who tries to make any kind of commercial living,
mm-hmm.
you will eventually have no chance in the marketplace because the AI generators can produce hundreds of versions of things that you could produce one or two of and put them out there faster, and they can literally respond to the market like, oh, everyone's really into funny images of Taylor Swift right now, and suddenly there's 100 sketches that are funny of Taylor Swift by an AI.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, unfortunately, it's one of those things like, was Facebook a net positive for the world? Is Google a net positive for the world? In some ways, yes. And Amazon, in some ways, absolutely, yes. But every single thing you feed into these systems helps those systems be better at generating exactly what you want or what the crowd wants. And so as we use the AI generation for images, for our really altruistic, wonderful projects, we are also contributing to the training of an AI generator to squeeze out anyone else that would ever make images for products like this.
Yeah.
So it's a really difficult moral time where, I mean, and you know, I've read all the arguments. People are like, oh, you're just afraid of it like the camera. Oh, okay. Or, oh my God, they're evil and we need to stop them all. Okay. You know, there's a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
I do think we are going to be using them. And you are correct. It'll make your product better and fun, and you're the one kind of generating the image that you want to use. And I get it. It's amazing. And just, you can't not acknowledge that we are feeding a beast that is going to eat up artists.
Yeah.
Which is sad. It's sad, but it just may be the way it is. Now, there's always going to be art. We're never going to stop artists from doing art. And there's always going to be artists who can make money doing art. I don't think they're going away forever, for a while anyway. But I think, not talking top-tier artists, talking like people who just try to make a living doing comic book art or try to make a living doing art for ad agencies or doing art for fantasy stuff, you know?
Yeah.
I think those people are going to have a much harder time. And I think we are feeding the machine that is going to make it be a very hard time for them to make money at it.
Yeah.
And that's...
It's a difficult dilemma, right? Because we, in the Spyro game we created, we have this like Dream or whatever, it's very possible. But we want to put it on Kickstarter if people want to play this game, so make it real. And then if we put it on Kickstarter, we will have real artists instead of the AI art. So that's our decision in it. So creating this game and then letting real artists take over for the AI art is our plan with it. And if people want this, I think that's a good thing. Also, I as you, Katie, I'm not very good at drawing or anything or painting pictures or anything. So having this a inspiration thing, it's so great to set up these inspirations for a game or a deer, just a NPC or whatever, a monster or whatever. It's such a great idea to use this as such. I'm on the Danish Convention Festival at Easter. It's just a very artsy role-playing festival or convent we have in Denmark, and I have this game called Movie Star, where the players in through 3 hours will create this fictional movie star with the ten movies this individual have been in. It's pretty fun collaborative storytelling thing, and then I will use the AR art to create the image of this person, to have all the keywords they use. If they say, okay, he looks a little like Bruce Willis, a little bit like Keanu Reeves kind of thing, and then we'll try to mix it together, and then we create a picture of this individual in the last section of the game. That's my way to use it in role-playing games, for example, right? So that's my idea with it. So yeah, as you said, it's a beast, and we have to be careful how to use it, for sure. So yeah. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, good.
So yeah. But thanks for the start up again with the good questions. Uh-huh. So that was great to hear your opinions about surrounding that. Cool. Thanks.
I mean,
What did you say?
Oh, I said I could talk on and on about that. That's yeah. Really
it's a
topic.
It's a fascinating topic. It is really is. It's such a, as you said, a beast. It's so dangerous and so beautiful. It's like
we're all going to use it.
Yeah.
And then we're going to regret using it later.
Maybe, yeah.
But we're going to use it. We're, don't give me, you know. Do you remember?
Like Facebook.
Do you remember? I'm nerd enough to know enough, but anyone that knows Star Trek better than me is going to cringe when I try to summarize this. But I believe it turned out in Star Trek The Next Generation, it turned out at one point they discovered that the warp drive was like destroying the fabric of the universe.
Yeah.
And they kind of shrugged and like, oh well, yeah. Like, yeah, we're gonna warp around. I mean, what are we gonna do?
Yeah, we have to travel.
You gotta travel.
Yeah. So yeah, I don't think it's a ruining anything, but if artists don't get a hold on how to use AI art in their own art,
yeah,
it's gotta be a shit show. I know a few graphic designers, and they're looking at this and like, how can I do this? And one of them just said to me, okay, that's fine. Then I want to refine the art that people come to me with, like you said, Katie, right. Like this inspiration drawing of this Cthulhu monster or whatever. Then I can refine this. I can draw it in other positions. I can draw real fingers on them because that's one of the issues right now. I can maybe inspiration for
fingers.
It. And so, yeah. Yeah, fingers. That's one of the issues. So taking this head on and say, yeah, whatever. I'm better artist than this AR artist thingy. But now this is the reality. I cannot stop this reality. I cannot say, hey, this doesn't exist and blah blah blah. And I go to court with this machine. Sure, we will sue the machines, like Mike Pillow said, right? So yeah. But yeah, thanks for giving me a lection in VTT and online gaming. That was pretty cool. And I hope you're and my listeners also get something out of it, because it's been a thing in Denmark, but it's not been so huge in Denmark as other places. Also because English is not our primary language, so there are some barriers there, of course. But of course we will want to play more online and play with other countries and so on. So that's also fun. And some of the niche games I'm running, it could be fun to test them out on other. Cool, yeah. But thanks for this, guys. It was fun talking to you.
Likewise.
Yeah, it was very inspirational. So thanks for this. Bye bye.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, for your D&D fans out there, check out Adventures Unbound. Next week, we want to talk to Andreas from Sweden Rolls and hear about his thoughts on the new game Dragonbane from Free League, and of course, music and how to play. Follow us on Facebook, GM Workshop, the podcast. If you want to interact with us and talk to us, give us a message.